Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang, offering ourselves at His lotus feet as the beautiful music of the flute resonates. Bhagwan very beautifully once said, the melody of the flute is not Venunada, it is Vedanada. It is in fact the melody of the scriptures, because the flute symbolizes how, if only we become hollow, we will become so full of Him that what comes out of us will be only His melody and His glory. All the Vahinis, every stream of Bhagwan's discourse is an attempt to prod us to move towards that hollowness so that we become whole, becoming one with Him. In this journey of soaking in the stream of His beautiful writings, we are now in chapter 5 of Sandeha Nivarini. In the last few episodes, we discussed the first segment of Sandeha Nivarini, chapter 5. In fact, we did the first segment for 2 episodes because there were so many very beautiful things that Bhagwan had mentioned. How much ever you discuss and deliberate upon, it always seems that we have only touched the surface. That feeling was so overwhelming 2 weeks ago that we thought we should have one more session on segment 5. Today we move on to the next segment, 5.2, as we have divided it. And in this, Bhagwan is talking about a very beautiful poem that he had written. And Swami says to the Bhakta that before you know the concept of who am I, before you even attempt to understand, before I begin to tell you about the principle of who am I, spend some time contemplating on this poem. So in the first segment of the poem that we discussed in the previous episode, it talks about a doll. Tai 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 bomma. That's how the poem goes. So let me play for you now the second segment, wherein we have 4 more stanzas of this poem. This poem is very elaborate. There are so many stanzas in it. And after we listen to what Bhagwan has written, we will pray to Swami to guide our thoughts, to help us in this session of satsang today. To join us, we have Brother K.M. Ganesh, who is from Bhagwan's University in Prashantinilam campus. And we also have a guest, Mr. Raj Srivatsan. Mr. Raj came to Bhagwan way back in 1972. That's when he had his first darshan. And ever since then, he has been on this path, soaking in Bhagwan's love and trying to walk on the principles that he has set for ourselves. Someone who has always relentlessly tried to walk on the path of Dharma, and being a lawyer and a management consultant, he had many opportunities to practice this in real world. He did this in India for many years as a management consultant. He's also a physicist. He became a lawyer. So in all these different opportunities that Bhagwan gave him, constantly he was trying to see how to make Dharma the karma of his life. And later on, by divine design, he moved to the US and re-qualified himself to practice law in the US. So he has now helped so many clients while practicing securities law, criminal law, corporate and finance law. So he has dealt with any number of real life situations and taken inspiration from Bhagwan to work on the path of Dharma. Satyam Vada Dharmam Chara. This is what is the emblem of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, and this is a higher learning which is for all of us. So we'll pray to Swami and see how we can benefit from his experience and see what is it that we can imbibe in our lives as we make this journey from I to we to he. So let's listen to segment 5.2.
Playing and wallowing in dirt, without a trace of shame, as a child you stood and fell, and enacted a different play every day. Playing with your friends together, learning a lot with delight, year after year, oh my doll, grew up with striking brilliance. Coming together as a husband or as a wife, merrily on the stage of samsara, you played the roles with childish fervor, as if it is the be-all and end-all of your life. Bringing together different dolls, the Creator creates many more dolls with the vain belief that all are mine. You play with them gleefully.
So those are the four stanzas that we will discuss today. So welcome Mr. Raj Srivastan to the studios, and Brother K.M. Ganesh.
Sayam Bhagavan.
Sayam, Brother. Pranams at his lotus feet. Thank you for the opportunity.
Since we have you today in the satsang, I feel that we should not lose time listening to what I have to say or Brother Ganesh has to say, but we should listen more to what you can share, because it is not every day that we can have you for the satsang session.
Thank you for putting the load on my shoulders. It's a wonderful opportunity, yes. Swami's teachings are endless. And what fascinates me is the simple way in which he transfers weighty wisdom. Mm. And this Vahini is an example of that, where he has basically taken the hand of the bhakta, that is the disciple, or the aspirant, I should say, those who are the person who is inquisitive about life.
Yes.
And then led him gently through chapter by chapter in this, from the most fundamentals of spiritual knowledge, how to seek it. And then he is basically emphasizing the childishness or the avidya stage, that is the ignorant stage of the human being who enters life, dies, and comes back again and again, as per Sanatana Dharma and also prevalent Western thinking as well, that reincarnation does exist. Mm-hmm. So basically what Swami is emphasizing through these beautiful, this poem, the stanzas, is that our ignorance causes us to come back repeatedly and wallow in the dirt, which is basically the world, and in complete ignorance of what awaits us and what the real path is.
Yes.
It's so beautifully he has put it.
Yeah.
And Swami, the most wonderful thing I've observed about Swami is he says everything with such a flourish, and he says it with so much of grandeur in the simplicity of his words, that his messages cannot but sink home.
Absolutely.
For the serious aspirant.
Yes.
And that is something he has discussed in the beginning of his chapters as well, where he says an individual needs a guru to take him out of this ignorance.
Correct.
And
yes.
Just not any guru.
Yeah.
It has to be a guru who is able to give you the upadesha, that is spiritual teaching.
Yes.
And that every guru cannot give you that. But what's more important and struck me, if I may continue.
Please.
Is Swami unlike most people think, a guru is somebody who can impart some knowledge to you. But Swami says, beware. He says, not everybody is a guru. You have to be really careful about examining the person who holds himself out to be a guru to you.
Yes.
And not accept anybody as a guru. Because once you do your evaluation, more like a project.
Correct.
You evaluate. You look at the pros and cons.
Yes.
You understand whether the person who is holding himself out as a guru really has the credentials to be a guru.
Yes.
Then once you accept him, then the upadesha begins.
Yes.
And that upadesha clarifies your avidya, rather expunges it.
Yes.
And then that is what Swami has done in this Vahini.
Absolutely.
Very beautifully.
In fact, in this second segment that we are discussing, so Swami says, playing with your friends together, learning a lot with delight, year after year, oh my doll, grew up with striking brilliance, coming together as a husband or as a wife, merrily on the stage of samsara, you played the roles with childish fervor, as if it is the be-all and end-all of your life. In fact, that reminded me of one interesting story that Bhagwan used to narrate often in his discourses, wherein a young man who goes to this Guruji to learn about spirituality. He was a religious minded person, and when he goes to this Guru lived outside the village. So one day, as the Guru was giving his instructions, you know, he mentioned about how this relationship between father, mother, brother, sister, husband, wife are all temporary and they're not real. And house and wealth and property, they are all illusory. And so those things did not really sink in into this young chap. And he felt, no, this is not correct. Guru is telling, Mata nasti, Pita nasti, Gruham nasti, Artham nasti, Tasmat jagrata jagrata, be aware, these are all illusions.
Bandhu nasti.
Yeah.
Friends.
Friends nasti, yes. Janma dukkham, jara dukkham, Swami used to say, jaya dukkham, puna dukkham. Puna puna, Swami used to say, antakale mahadukkham tasmat jagrata jagrata. So these are the injunctions that the Guru was talking about, and this young man felt that this is not true, because my wife loves me so much, my mother loves me so much, and so he told the Guru that, you know, even though what you mentioned might be okay for you, but I don't subscribe to this. The Guru said, okay, it does not matter. You do one thing, I'm going to give you a pill. So you take this pill after you go home with water. And the property of this pill is, after you take this, you will lie down, you will appear as if you are lifeless, but you can actually hear all the conversations. So the young man goes home and he takes the pill, and the family members see something horrible has happened. This man is lying down there and all the vital signs seem to be not working, and so the wife now starts crying that, what will happen to me? You are gone. Where will I go? What about my fate? I am the only daughter of my father and all that. Then the mother comes and the mother cries, oh, you are such a beloved son of mine. How will I live my life now? The father comes, and that's how everyone is lamenting. And that is when the Guru comes in. And the Guru says, oh, what happened? What happened? They say, this is what has happened. The Guru says, okay, it does not matter. I can solve it. I can solve it. There's just one condition. I will sprinkle some water and I can bring him back to life. There is no problem. It is just that in exchange, one of you have to give your life. That's all that is needed. And so he asks anybody, any one of you would like to volunteer. And so he asked the mother, and the mother says, oh, I would have loved to do it, but you know, who will look after my husband? You know, he's old, and if I am not there, I think it will be very difficult for him. And who will look after the daughter-in-law? You know, I think I have to be there. And he goes to the father. The father says, I am the head of the house. If I go, who will look after the house? There are a lot of things to be still sorted out. So, I mean, I want to do it, but I don't think I can do it. Then he goes to the wife, you love your husband so much. Can you just do this? He will come back to life, I promise you. And the wife says that, oh, I really, really love him. But the thing is, I'm the only daughter of my parents, and my parents would be really crestfallen if something happens to me. You know, I think I'll have to see if someone else can do it. And then all the three go back into the room and they have their own mutual discussion how to solve this conundrum. And they come back and they say, we have an idea. And then they tell the guru that, you know, Guruji, you are a sannyasi. You don't have any attachments and anything. Why don't you give up your life?
Your life is all about sacrifice. So just one more.
One more sacrifice. And that is exactly when the guru indicates the man to get up. The guru touches him and the man comes back into consciousness.
So he got his baptism in truth.
In truth, yeah. So I feel that was a pretty, even though humorous, but pretty interesting story. Because I think most of the time we think these are all real, but to what extent they are real, this simple story perhaps conveyed it to a good extent, isn't it?
I think one of the core issues that it conveys is body consciousness.
Yes.
Okay. Swami explained, I think, in one of his other Vahinis, he discusses the elemental structure of the body from Akasha and, Vayu, from Agni, Jalam and Prithvi. The body is created and fashioned out of these five elements, and it is infused with the gunas, these sattva guna, the rajas and tamasic guna, and the atma. It then is housed in it. So we assume that combination and permutation of five elements is the real reality. And that reality is brought about because of delusion. And the delusion, avidya, masks, maya masks the atma's awareness of everything.
Yes.
That is very difficult to shake.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, this guru did him a great favor by demonstrating to him that nothing in the world is of consequence. No relationship is of consequence, and no relationship, if it's put to the test, will last.
Mm.
And Swami often used to say, the only friend you have is God.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So this analogy which you brought out, this example, it emphasizes that the world, samsara that we enter, is caused by delusion. And the delusion is caused principally because of the fixation on the body being the real entity. So the body is not. And that's why we need the guru.
Absolutely.
So we come back to this 5.2,
where
the emphasis is on the childlike acceptance of the body. When you grow into the adult state, you accept the body as the reality. Then you get married thinking that's for keeps. And then you go through life thinking everything is going to be hunky-dory. But it's not. In fact, Shakespeare also provided an analogy that the world itself is a stage.
Yes.
And we play different roles in it. We come in and we go. So, and I think that's the crux.
Yes.
The crux is where that example that you brought out, which relates to the ignorance which the stanzas that Swami just now read out, emphasizes.
Yeah. In fact, I was also reminded of the story that Swami used to narrate of King Janaka. When you talked about body consciousness and being focused on the Atma, the difference that it can bring about. In fact, another example also comes from the Ramayana. But if you look at the story of King Janaka, Swami used to narrate this story where Sage Sukha used to impart spiritual instruction in the forest.
Sage Vyasa's son.
Yes, Sage Vyasa's son.
Vyasa's son, yes.
The author of the
Bhagavatams.
So he used to narrate, have his ashram and impart spiritual instruction beyond Mithilapura, where Janaka used to stay. And when King Janaka came to know of Shuka being there, he also wanted to become the disciple of Shuka Maharshi. And he goes and sage Sukha accepts him, even though he was a king, as his disciple. And so very promptly, King Janaka used to go to the hermitage, the ashram there for spiritual knowledge. And sage Sukha always had a great respect for King Janaka. And on one occasion, when King Janaka became late for the class, the master was waiting. And all the other disciples were wondering, why has the master to wait for King Janaka? It means that the master is differentiating between the disciples.
Or is or the students being irreverential to the master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some sort of partiality.
Partiality.
Yeah, partiality.
Favoring him. Yeah, he's just because he's a king.
Just because he's a king. Yeah.
Special privilege.
And the master is supposed to be someone who understands the principles of equality and integrity and whatever. And how can the master have such differences of treatment for different disciples and so on? And so the master could sense that. All the disciples are feeling uneasy, and later on, of course, King Janaka comes, and after that, the master starts the classes. And as the classes are going on, suddenly the master says, "Oh, the kingdom is on fire! The kingdom is on fire!" And the moment he says that, he says, "All of you go, look after your belongings. I think your houses are getting burned." And so all the disciples immediately, they don't even think, they jump and they go off. Actually, they're all gone. They are all supposed to, only King Janaka was a king actually, with the maximum number of properties and attachments.
Potential casualties.
Potential, yeah.
He stood to lose the most.
Yeah, he was the one who was, other people had little huts and they are all, you know, so-called...
limited possessions.
Absolutely. But they all ran.
Yeah.
And King Janaka was there, lost in that wisdom that the master was giving. Because King Janaka, even though in the world, he was so focused on the Atma, he said, "Master, those positions are all illusory." Master says, "King Janaka, why are you not going? Your palace is getting burnt." And he says, "That is all illusion, Master. This is the real. This wisdom that you are giving me, there is nothing greater than this." And he is lost in contemplation of the Atma Tattva. As you mentioned about body consciousness, this is what it makes you. Today is Independence Day as we are discussing this, August 15, 2019. Mm-hmm. And I think this is what is true independence.
True.
You know, this is what is to be one who experiences real freedom.
I think Swami did mention that also. The real independence is discovering who you really are.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that is not the terrestrial identity,
yes,
but the spiritual identity.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, Janaka was supposed to be one of the best kings.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, that's what, I mean, when people first read, no, as I read through the poem, no, instant thing was vairagya actually, okay. Mm-hmm. You get that
detachment.
Yeah.
At the same time, coming from the master, I know how much he cared. The same person. It's very easy to misunderstand if we partially look at it. You know, you can say, okay, so then it's very easy to lose interest. Mm-hmm. Swami never said lose interest in life. Be caring, do your dharma, do your duty. It's not that Swami says, hands in the society, heads in the forest. Don't run away from the society. You do your duty with love and care, but don't get attached. Don't get entangled.
Correct.
That is a thing that we have to be conscious about.
Yes.
Because if you have a superficial, many people have left home and gone. In fact, one place, Satyasai Anandai, very clearly the author says, 1960s, one sannyasi had come and Swami called him inside and Swami told, first thing you go and take care of your mother. You just left her like that and you took sannyasa. Mm-hmm. All the sadhana that you're doing from morning to evening is going, it's getting washed off with the tears of your mother. Okay, and there are many people who have just, they left their actual responsibility, ran away, in the name of spirituality.
Yeah.
Okay. And saying, okay, self-realization is the highest and if you take care of that, everything is taken care of. No. Mm-hmm. In fact, from Swami's life, this very example is very clear. Swami says, how you left her like that? And you ran off. Every day she's crying. And all the tears that are coming out is washing off all the sadhana that... I'm telling you, even if you do penance for the rest of the life or many births, you will not get moksha.
That goes to the very core of what Swami's fundamental teaching is, which he says he has drawn from the Gita, that is help ever and hurt never. Never. So if you hurt the very person that you are supposed to do your duty towards, then where is the dharma in that? So just to clarify, in Prema Vahini, Swami talks about a vanaprastha.
Vanaprastha.
And vanaprastha's responsibilities.
Yes.
In that he does talk about leaving and going to the forest.
Yeah.
But not when you have a pressing duty to do.
In fact, Swami defines also, Swami in the same books told, the vanaprastha stage starts when your children have got married. That is the last responsibility of the parent.
Mm-hmm.
After that, once your children are married,
you're transitioning from grihastha.
From grihastha to that is a transition point. Your worldly duty is over. In fact, Swami also tells the mother, the author says, Swami, I want, give me some suggestions on meditation. Swami told, Swami beautifully says, okay, this is not the right time because whatever you meditate, the moment, next moment your son will make some, do some prank, you'll shout and the punyam that you get from them will be washed.
Mm-hmm.
Right now you do your duty as a mother perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
A time will, and Swami clarifies, when your children get married, they're gone, your grihasthashrama duty is over.
Mm-hmm.
That is a time of transition to vanaprastha.
Correct.
Many times we mix up things and that's why...
Yeah, yeah, we do it prematurely with the wrong understanding. And again, it comes back to ignorance. And and again, it comes back to even this Vahini where Swami talks about, first inform yourself properly.
Yeah.
Do your inquiry.
Yes.
If you don't
incomplete knowledge is dangerous.
Exactly. Little knowledge is a dangerous thing, as it is said in an English poem. I think Tennyson or somebody, to forget about who really wrote that. But you're absolutely right. So it is incumbent on us to first inquire.
Yeah.
And Swami also mentioned the same thing goes for Christianity also, and where there is a lot of misunderstanding. In fact, when I spoke to a lot of my clients, as you know, represent in the criminal field, most of them are Christians. So when I talk to them about what Christianity means, they are unable to define it or understand it. And this is not a slur. It's just the way that they have not been informed. They don't have gurus who have taught them. Jesus very clearly mentioned in Matthew 7:7, that is chapter 7, verse 7, ask, seek, knock. If you ask, it shall be told you. If you knock, it shall be opened to you. If you seek, you will find it. What is he talking about? About the treasures. The treasures are the spiritual treasures and the truths. So you need to ask. So that basically means inquire. And inquire diligently. So, this coming back to this vanaprastha thing, if you don't make the right inquiries from the right gurus, how are you going to know when you have to enter that stage and when you have to leave? There's a lot of misunderstanding, even if I may say within the Sai circles, like people rush off to do the seva, charity begins at home.
Yes.
You do your charity at home first.
Yes.
That's where it is needed. Your duty, principal duty, instead of leaving, doing that, a lot of people believe that Narayan Seva outside or serving somebody else outside or giving money to somebody else outside is a great service. No doubt it's a service, but it's a selfish one because you're depriving your own family of
I've heard complaints from many students also. Some of their mothers are Balvikas gurus and they feel that, okay, the amount of time that mother could have spent with them, the love and attention of the mother is not enough. They felt there was some deficiency because she was too busy doing all other activities. I mean, it's not the quantity of time, it's the quality of time.
That Swami always emphasized on
quality
that.
Is important. Yes. And if the child feels from his heart that he has been ignored or neglected, if you're failing your duty as a mother, you'll never do justice to other duty in whatever name.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing is that we always try to convince ourselves that we are doing right.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to, the fundamental thing should not get ignored.
No, you're completely right. If I may share an episode with you.
Yeah, sure.
A few years ago when I attended an international Satya Sai conference in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one of these study circles. And in the study circle, the issue was about performing service.
Hmm.
And there was this individual who diligently stuck to his position that what I'm doing is correct. Mm-hmm. I'm going out and serving people. And on inquiry, it came to our understanding that there were needs in the house which he could not fulfill. So he refused to accept the position that you have to first focus on your duty at home. And then if you have leisure time, you can then focus on some duty outside, something outside to help people serve. That accrues to you, even as punya, it accrues to you. But if you neglect your duty, it's not going to accrue to you. No matter how much you go outside and do service for other people, it's really not going to benefit because you have violated your principal dharma. He refused to accept that position. And he refused to accept that position very vociferously.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, Swami has taught saying we should do seva and I'm going out to do seva. See, that's a fundamental misunderstanding, you know, and that causes a lot of grief also.
Grief.
And then you blame your master for it. So.
Absolutely.
That is the ignorance that we are coming across. And that also, if I may add another point.
Please.
The attributes which the body picks up. It's not only body consciousness, but is mind consciousness too. So that is the kama, krodha, moha, lobha, mara, matsarya, mamakara, ahamkara. And the 8 forms of conceit, 16 enemies, Swami has talked about beautifully. Those we accrue when we become our mind conscious and body conscious. The mind conscious, I'm talking about ahamkara as the mind.
Yes.
So, and that is where all this misunderstanding comes from.
Yeah.
You know, where we create a need for ourselves, a need for excitement, a need for participation, a need for entanglement with the world. And under the pretext of doing seva, we go and do it.
Mm.
But real seva is real the tyaga seva. That is where you really sacrifice something, something precious for yourself. Not sacrifice somebody else's need for help in your family, but sacrifice what your leisure is.
Yeah.
So if you can use your leisure to watch a movie and you have the time only to yourself, if you go out and do seva, that means something.
Yeah.
Yes. But neglecting the family, no.
In fact, that reminds me of when this concept of seva was taking root in the Satya organization way back, I think in the 60s and 70s and 80s. I remember the time when my parents became devotees way back in the 70s. So the concept of seva that I saw them do and Swami emphasized a lot was linked to sealing on desires. So Swami said, if you are going out and serving, see what have you stopped in your life to generate that excess resource or that excess time. So, if every day you were going and spending time in, say, entertainment with your office colleagues, and if you spare that time and then do seva, then Swami was okay with that seva.
Yeah.
Sealing on desires. Similarly, so I remember in our Sai Center, in a Samiti in Odisha, so each person took one thing to see what is it that he can stop in his life.
Yeah. Give up.
Give up. And generate that resource. If I was doing something for my entertainment or if there was some habit that I had which I can now pause at least for some time even if I cannot stop it. And I do seva only through that resource that I generate. Swami was so particular about it. So people used to, I remember every day before eating, my mother used to take a little rice and keep it away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is like from our food that day, we have kept some food for another person. And so that rice that was collected was what was used for Narayan Seva.
Mm.
So this concept of seva always for Swami was, is it linked to sacrifice?
And if I may add a beautiful episode from Swami's hospital, super specialty hospital, as you are all very well aware, especially you, Brother Bishu, that little child who saved money washing clothes himself and put together some 300-400 rupees and offered that humbly to Swami. And Swami took that and then he started the project rolling with that money. So that is the kind of tyaga, sacrifice.
Yes.
The boy could have easily used the money to get the dhobi to wash.
Yes.
But he decided to soil his hands washing the clothes.
Yes.
And then put aside that money.
Yes.
Which means the time he spent also was time he could have spent on something else.
Yes.
And offered that money to Swami. That is the holiest of holy, service-oriented money that he got.
Here, one thing I want to quickly add is, God, many times you have heard this, God sees the bhavam. The intention, the bhav, the feeling in which you're doing. He is not interested in the number games.
Yes.
We are getting into the number games.
Yeah.
We have done this, we have done that, and we're trying to quantify it and say, okay, we'll surpass. It's like a project. This time we'll... No, God is not interested in all that.
The moment we say, we did this, that nishtama karma is gone.
That itself is gone.
Yeah.
So the feeling and the real sacrifice, no? The individual knows and God knows. You don't have to show it to the world.
Yes.
Okay. Many times we are trying to project our this thing to others.
Mm-hmm. For recognition.
Recognition. Mm-hmm. So again, the whole purpose of sacrifice gets defeated. Mm-hmm. When you start speaking like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's an old saying, what the right hand gives, the left hand should not know.
No.
So that's the way it has to be done.
In fact, talking about sacrifice, it's reminded of that episode from Ramayana, wherein the battle has started, and it is day 3 of Rama Ravana Yuddha. And there comes a very, very powerful warrior, and Rama is trying his best to get rid of him, but he is so valiant. Vibhishana comes there, and then Vibhishana starts infusing courage into Rama and says, no, Rama, you can do it. Rama almost was in a position where he felt that, my God, this opponent is so valorous. And Vibhishana continuously keeps encouraging Rama and supporting Rama, and the whole day the battle goes, and finally Rama is able to vanquish that warrior. And when the warrior falls, Vibhishana immediately also collapses. He also collapses. And then Rama, then suddenly people come and, you know, they sprinkle water and etc. And then Vibhishana comes back into consciousness, and Vibhishana praises Rama. You are a great warrior. You have conquered. You have removed one person who was really crucial for you winning this battle. Rama said, all that is fine, but what happened to you? Why did you fall? Mm. And he says, nothing, Rama, don't worry about it. It's just something to do with my body. It is this body attachment, Rama. Don't worry about it. No, tell me. No, Rama, actually that warrior was my own son. My own son. Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell me, Rama said. No, why should? Rama, my relationship with you supersedes everything else. He says, I am your servant. No other relationship can supersede this.
That is Atma consciousness.
That is Atma consciousness.
Not Deha consciousness. Yeah.
So he says, if I had to think about my body, then I would have definitely been stopped doing what I was doing. But I thought of my relationship only with the Paramatma.
If I may add, I was researching some of the well-known scientists of the world. And one name struck out to me, Neil deGrasse, the astrophysicist. Okay. And I was quite surprised when I heard his interviews that he is extremely body conscious. And Swami made the distinction that intelligence is not is going to impede your development unless it is used in the proper way.
Yeah.
It has to be used as a key to further your inquiry and take you towards the ultimate entity, that is the Atma.
Yes.
Instead of that, if that intelligence becomes cleverness and takes you towards the world, then you're going to be constantly deluded, though for the world's appearance, you are extremely intelligent, well-known, progressive, and quite smart.
So the person might feel empty inside. His ego will not permit him to tell that.
No, that's right. That's see, they grasp onto what they believe is the truth without inquiry.
Yeah.
And they hold fast to that. But they don't try to investigate, like Swami says in this, I think, two or three about the Guru. You have to inquire, you have to find the credentials.
Yes.
You have to convince yourself that that's the right master for you.
Yes.
Which also means that you have to find out whether what you believe in is really worth believing in. So he makes a reference there to the kind of God, the name that you take. You must not pick any name just for the sake of that. When you get the Upadesha from the right guru, then you should stick to that name, and that name then brings you that clarity. It takes you home to the goal. But I was surprised when deGrasse was asked, like, what happens to you after death? And he says, after death, our body goes back to the elements and that's it. So don't you believe in an after? No. The body goes back to the elements. See, there's a whole missing chunk there. And that's what the poem also emphasizes. You soil yourself as a child, you get married as, and as an adult. But you are not aware of what you should be seeking and how you should be seeking that, where you should be seeking that, and from whom you should be seeking that. It's complete void, as you rightly put it, brother.
And the greatest problem is if you don't want to know also.
And that, Swami says, leads to dukkha.
Dukkha. Sorrow.
Worry and sorrow.
Sorrow.
And there's that emptiness, as you rightly put it. Because I know how I felt before Swami came to me. I knew exactly how empty I felt. Completely empty. Believe it or not, brother, I just want to mention this.
Please.
Because I got Swami's darshan in 1972 means nothing. When I really knew who Swami was, that was only in 2009. So all of those years, 37 years, were spent in oblivion. Neither here nor there. Although there were little glimpses of his divinity and acceptance, I thought, I was constantly sitting on the fence. And in an arrogant manner too. And in some ways in an ignorant manner. So, that's why that emphasis on that intellect, being buddhi, being used to research, observe, and firsthand. Swami says firsthand. Because you ask for the experience, you'll get your experience. Yeah. But you must have the faith and the belief to ask for that experience. And you get it. And I'm very, very blessed. I got plenty. But that came when Swami revealed himself to me. But after a lot of struggle. So a lot of people say, oh, but you're lucky. It happened. No, it's not. There are so many people who are really desirous of seeing that entity. And they get to see it. If their belief is really strong. Then you move out of this chapter of body consciousness and you move towards Atma consciousness.
So what happened in 2009?
Like something pushed you on the right side of the fence.
Oh. Well, it will be controversial if I say that. But let's just put it this way, bluntly, because I think we did it in Tryst with Divinity, 2016. I had completely forgotten about Swami. I had not remembered Swami over the years. And my life crashed. You know, the economy crashed in the US as well in 2008. I lost my job. I got divorced. I went through a horrendous set of good fortune, I should say. Not bad fortune, because that's what opened my eyes and made the master.
Blessing in disguise.
Yeah, master came to me. So the master appeared to me in Delaware, US. And that shocked me. And that is what turned my life around. Wow. And you can see, I think we have met so many times after that.
Yes.
So I was not at all a believer. I never believed in Swami as much. But 2009 was the turning point. And then in a string of dreams and instructions and blessings, Padnamaskars. Even in 2018, I got so many Padnamaskars from Swami. So if you really believe and you really love, and you try to keep his commandments, as Jesus says, he will demonstrate himself to you. And, you know, in many places around the world, Swami's Vibhuti is manifesting. His Amrit is manifesting. Swami has been seen by so many people. Swami has come to so many people. So that's basically what happened. So now that was an invitation from him for me to inquire about him and to study more about his mission. And to find out the truth and the relevance and the validity of who he is, what he is here for, and what is he accomplishing, and what are we supposed to do with that knowledge. So from 2009, when he appeared, that is what it compelled me to do. And from that time, my research has been quite intense in Swami, not only in Swami, but the Old Testament, New Testament, the Quran, the Buddhist teachings, and of course our Shastras, the Puranas, Itihasas, and the Vedas, been studying Vedanta. So that has brought me to a clear understanding of who he is. So my journey has been kind of kick-started by his appearance.
And I think once you study the Vedantas and the Upanishads, then all these beautiful vahinis perhaps become so easy to understand, appreciate and relate to, isn't it?
It's like Swami said about the cloth. The cloth is made by the yarn. The yarn is the Veda. The cloth is the Shastras and, you know, Itihasas and all that. So you can understand it, and Swami's Vahinis are woven in by that yarn too. So you can easily make out. It's the same yarn which flows through all of the spiritual cloth, including the teachings of Buddha and Jesus. So you can make it out clearly. It makes so much more sense. And it's more enjoyable.
Absolutely. I think now you will appreciate it more, you will enjoy it more. And this becomes the nectar of your life.
And there's a connectivity. You can connect it to the mundane. You can connect it to other spiritual pursuits as well. Not necessarily only Swami's. Because Swami's cuts across everything, you know.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, when you're reading about this 5.2, in the seventh stanza, Swami says, bringing together different dolls, the Creator creates many more dolls. With the vain belief that all are mine, and you play with them gleefully. So, many people, like this young man that I mentioned before, will also feel that, you know, if I look at all the world like this, with everything being Maya, which something Ganesh also referred to before, how do I do my jobs normally in the world? How do I go around successfully delivering my responsibilities if I constantly feel that everything is Maya and everything is an illusion and this body is just a contraption and this is not what I am? Though Bhagavan has mentioned these the answer for this and so many discourses, but I want you to reflect on this and I want you to share what would be your advice to a youngster.
I would like to add a quick thing in this.
Please.
Same question. Yes. Question only. Like, we cannot pretend to be interested without being interested. Mm-hmm. But being interested, you should not be in the name of so passionately attached that I should get it done. You should not forget that it is just a game.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you should be very sincere in this thing. So the contactless contact means interested but internally detached.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the Janaka's thing. Yes. He was the best of the king, very efficient. At the same time, he was not the person who started running, you know. In a sense, how do we get that combination of both in the same person?
So if a youngster says that, you know, okay, I'm not Janaka. Like people say, I'm not Gandhi. I'm not Janaka. So, you know, so forget it. So this is not for me. So,
like, this is something we cannot pretend, but probably an analogy or an example which will give a sense to what we're trying to achieve or trying to be.
No, it's an excellent question, and it's very core to human existence. And you're right. People say maybe it worked then.
Yeah.
It's not going to work now. This is the cell phone generation. Gen 5, I think, you know, Generation 5.
They press the escape button.
Right, escape button and escape from reality too. I think Swami somewhere mentioned it saying, it's not that the world is not real. It's just that the world is illusory because it's only temporal.
Hmm.
It will not exist for you. It's like sleep. You go into Sushupti and then you the world has ceased to exist for you. You come back from deep sleep into the waking stage, and the world that had disappeared during deep sleep Sushupti is now present again. So everything was dead for you when you were sleeping. Everything is alive for you when you are awake. So when are you really sleeping and when are you really awake? The issue of the question that you asked, and Brother Ganesh, you asked about this, is how do you explain to a person that this, how do I go about this? How I went about it, I will tell you.
Okay, great.
Okay, so my elderly devotee friend, who's 89 now, she told me, we used to discuss the Bhagavad Gita, she's Christian, and chapter 12, verse 15, Lord Krishna talks about, neither agitating the world, nor being agitated, you rise above fear, competition and elation, taking the world as it comes, good and bad. If you are able to translate that into practical terms, your responsibility is not to the fruit of your work, but only in the process. So if you're able to take care of the process, and take care of the process not from any spiritual perspective, but do the best you can in the process, earn the money that you're paid. That's good enough. You don't need to do anything more. Swami, in fact, says that very clearly. People are being paid more than they're doing. Yeah. You should do more than you're paid for.
Mm. True.
If you do that, that's good enough. You don't need to worry about any spiritual tenets, any commandments. You don't need to worry about the Vedanta, nothing. Just follow that commonsensical path. Can't we do that? If we are paid $1,000, can't we work for $1,000? Which means you go in on time, you don't cut corners during your work, you don't sit and have 2-hour meals, don't take that time, office time, to shop or do online shopping. Don't use your cell phone to talk to people. Don't use your private email to send emails to people. Make sure that you're conscientious in your work. Make sure that you have planned your work and execute your plan. And keep in mind that if you cannot serve your master faithfully, you cannot serve your wife, you cannot serve your father, you cannot serve your mother, you cannot serve your friend, you cannot serve society. So it extends into every facet of one's life. So if people say it worked for you, it'll not work for me, I would say, please just use your time, and use your time wisely,
yeah,
and conscientiously. That's all you need to do. Don't worry about any other thing. And spirituality will grow on you.
Yeah. I think that's basic to start with. And this will give you success in whatever you're doing in the worldly pursuits.
I have seen in a professional career, and I will not take names and places, but I've been around the block a bit, as you know. So I've worked in different facets in the government, federal, state. I've worked in private in the U.S. itself. And I have seen people who barely can be seen at lunch. You're working really hard. But the reason is not very far, because they're being paid a lot of money and they can't lose the job. So they work very hard. And then there are people who are in a comfortable position who have 2-hour lunches. And then it's 8-hour day becomes a 3-hour day. And they find ways to escape because the job security is there and you don't need to worry about it.
Mm.
What I am referring to is not that. That you are paid a lot of money and serve, therefore to protect your job, you're working hard. No. And that you're in a government job and you're spending the 2 hours or 3 hours on lunch and shopping and chatting and wasting time and waiting for the end of the day or cutting corners and leaving early. What I'm saying is, no matter what work you do, whether it is, you know, filling a bucket of water, cooking a meal, or rendering assistance to a friend, or shopping for your mother, or accompanying your wife, or providing medical treatment to somebody, or taking somebody somewhere. Do it conscientiously and do it diligently. Whatever you do, however mundane it is, if you're reading the newspaper, make sure that you're focusing your attention and living in the now and focusing your entire attention on that, what you're reading. That's enough. Just cultivate it in these small little tasks, everyday tasks, and you will be surprised how that will infuse itself in your job, regardless of whether you're paid a lot of money or you're paid very little money or you're paid no money.
It's like giving a reverence of or dignity of the divine, that they say. Everything that you think, that you do, do it with reverence and dedication.
And to put it in our own Sanatana Dharma terms, you're worshipping it as Saraswati and Lakshmi.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, there's a very beautiful Sanskrit adage, Tasmai Nama Karmani, they say, right?
Yes.
Every time you do anything, you should offer worship to that act.
Yes.
They say, Tasmai Nama Karmani. And Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam. What is yoga? To develop
union with the divine.
True. But they say, even to do your task diligently, Karmasu Kaushalam.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever karma you're doing, if you, as you are mentioning, to do it diligently,
mm-hmm,
that itself is yoga. As you are saying, that will take you on the path.
That is enough.
That is enough.
That is living in the now.
Yes.
Eckhart Tolle talks about living in the now, living in the present. Swami said live in the present. He said that the tree of yesterday produced a seed, which is today's seed produces the tree of tomorrow.
Yes.
What is Swami saying? Live in the now.
Yes.
Use your time and your mental faculties in a conscientious manner for a good task. and give your master more than what you're paid.
I think that is so beautiful, because here, since our true relationship is with the master, and every other relationship in the world is connected to the body, so all the time we feel accountable to him. All the time we feel that we report to him. All the time we feel that we are doing this for him. If we can cultivate that approach, if you are a spiritual person, you can definitely cultivate this approach slowly. If you are not a spiritual person, as you said, even if you are doing it for the employer, at least do it diligently. And somewhere you will reach.
Let me make it even more. If I may give an even more everyday example.
Yes.
You go to the gym.
Yes.
You go lift weights. If you go regularly to the gym and you work the same group of muscles, the muscle is going to grow and people are going to notice it.
Yes.
If you don't go to the gym and don't work out regularly, the muscle is not going to be seen.
Yes.
So what is happening is, by your discipline and your punctuality and your persistence and your patience, these are qualities Swami has taught. Patience, perseverance, purity, penance, duty, determination, devotion, discipline. These are the qualities Swami has taught. He spiritualized it. You don't need to, you can secularize it. If you apply these same principles, go to the gym regularly, your physique will turn out to be noticeable to people. What will happen is the same group of muscles are being activated, they will grow, and they'll become impressive. By infusing the same qualities of determination, devotion, discipline, and duty and purity, perseverance, penance, in your day-to-day tasks, again, what is happening is people are going to notice that you are a very conscientious worker. You are dependable, you are trustworthy, you are reliable. And people will notice it. And you don't have to do anything different. Just do what you are paid for and do it conscientiously. And involve yourself in it 100%. All modern. Put aside your cell phone. Put aside your emails. Put aside your phone calls. Put aside all personal matter and focus 100% on your work.
And I think we have seen any number of such examples in the ashram. If you have seen so many people who have served Swami for decades, handling so many responsibilities, be it Mr. Pedda Reddy, who used to look after Sai Geeta. Other day I was talking to...
He's a highly qualified person too.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. He was an MSc in physics.
Yes.
Yes.
M.Tech.
MSc or MTech, yes, yes. And yesterday I met one Dr. Lakshmikant Reddy, who has served in the Gokulam right from the 60s and 70s. Even though at that point, he was serving in a government hospital, but he used to come and serve in the Gokulam. Nobody asked him to do it. He was a veterinary doctor and he just started doing. And in 1992, Swami gave him the opportunity to formally look after Gokulam. And since from then on till he was able to move and his body allowed, he continued to serve. And just a few years ago, I think till 2008-2009, he was serving the Gokulam. Even now he's there. He walks now with the help of a stick. But these are the people who have led that kind of absolute...
commitment to them.
Commitment.
Yeah. I mean, they are almost like synonymous to inspired living.
Yes.
Like, nobody has to tell the sun to do its duty. Mm-hmm. Nobody has to tell the earth to rotate.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
But most of the people, majority of us are like Halley's Comet, you come once in 77 years. You get to show yourself. But if you are in the orbit, if you are inspired once, then it is, but to get to that inspired state.
Yes.
Is the sadhana. Because once you are there, then it is like you are in autopilot.
Yes.
But the whole thing is, we are like, coming, going, we get inspired, and then the whole crux, when you started the satsang, it says Maya.
Yeah.
One of the fundamental thing of Maya, it makes you forget.
Oh, yes.
It makes you forget. In fact, one boy, very beautifully shared, he just came and we have this type of mini satsangs in hostel. He told, I got a very wonderful dream today. It came, like sometimes when you get up in the morning, it's like your conscience is speaking, you come up with an answer. So, in his dream, in the morning when he got up, in his dream, what he dreamt, that he died. For some reason, he did not know the cause of death, but he died. But he remembers, as soon as he died, the first thought in his mind was, the first thought after death was, oh no,
again I was cheated by my mind in this birth.
Oh, wow.
That was the first thought. Oh,
that's
my God.
Constant integrated awareness.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
The first thought was, oh, my God, I was cheated again by your own mind.
Yeah.
That was the first thought. And he remembered that when he woke up.
Yeah.
And he immediately came and shared that. Yeah. So the whole thing of the Maya, you know, it makes you forget.
Yeah.
It makes you forget. Now, when I read the whole poetry, I was like, so clear. Swami is so bluntly clear. There's no ambiguity. This thing straight is telling. This is what it is. And when you read it, you know, it's like nothing to hide. It's this is what the truth is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not trying to dilute it to make you feel comfortable. No, absolute distilled truth he has told in this poetry.
Sure.
Essence.
Sure.
So if I remember this, no, I will not get entrapped or...
No, you will not. I want to ask you, brother, did I answer your question?
In that, I'm trying to get the being interested at the same time not...
No, did I answer your question, which you asked me earlier? Brother Bishu and you had asked me a question.
When you told that if we do with sincerity and with the full conscience, that is true. That's the right attitude of living.
Yes.
Yet the thing is, the umpteen number of times we sat here, we had beautiful discussion and we are like a bulb goes to 1,000 watt.
Yes.
But what happens is exactly what the poetry Swami has meant. The Maya aspect, like when you said after post 2009 is more like what I understood is Swami became the center of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he was just a part of your life.
He wasn't even a part.
Part of life.
Yeah.
Okay, but you had like 1972. You came.
He was a curiosity for me.
Just a curiosity.
Yes.
But the moment you made him the center, you know, everything started falling in place. Sort of.
Everything did.
Yes. So the thing is probably maybe it's an introspection for me at this moment is probably I have not yet made him the center of my life and that's why most of us.
Let me thank you for saying that. You do you mind if I take a few minutes?
No. Please. Yeah.
It's a good thing you brought that up. I don't want people to get the feeling, the listeners, that Swami is the only way.
Okay.
He's not the only way because he himself says he's all names and forms.
Mm.
You can pick whatever name you want. In fact, in this very Vahini. The Sandehi Nivarani. He says it in the initial pages, it's page 2, 3, 4, 5. He says, you must pick a name. And that is from the Upadesha given by the Guru that you eventually investigated and found appropriate. Mm. It could be anybody.
Mm.
It could be past Guru who is reflecting through pages like Jesus.
Mm.
Or it could be Buddha. Mm. Or it could be Prophet Muhammad. Or it could be somebody, whoever you.
Mm.
It could be Shirdi Baba. It could be Swami. Okay. Once you accept that position, you take that name and for your dhyana and everything, you use that name. Okay.
Mm.
But I am not referring to that at all.
Mm.
I did not have any belief in Swami until 2009. But I went through a lot of challenges in my life and that we discussed in the...
Yes.
Let me share one because I want readers, listeners to also understand. Because you're facing difficulties and challenges in life doesn't mean you're going to end up a failure.
Mm.
Because if that were the case, I would have ended up a miserable failure many times in my life. Because there was one phase when my mother was paralyzed. My father was also bedridden. He was bedridden for over a year. And my mother was paralyzed for over 6 years. And I was the caregiver and there was nobody at home. I cooked. I did everything. I finished my MBA in law also. And I did consulting while in the intensive care. She spent 18 months in the intensive care. In Apollo Hospital in Chennai and in Trinity Hospital. So if I were to throw up my hands and say life has been cruel to me and my life is going to be a waste, I would not have graduated 5 degrees after that and become a successful lawyer in the US. And by success, I don't mean money. I mean in serving people and conscientiously.
Right.
So the message I have for people is I did not have any particular name that I was attached to.
Hmm.
I did not pray to any particular name. There was a vacuum. But I had the duty consciousness that I have to do what is in front of me and do it well. There's an old English song which says, do whatever you do, do well, boy. Do whatever you would do, do well. You must do it well. So when I was cleaning my mother's, washing her, bathing her, I did it with complete compassion and love, prema. I did it with duty. I did it with passion. I did it with the feeling that that poor human being is suffering and struggling. I should do my very best to alleviate any discomfort or pain. And as many times as necessary. And life will take care. And it took care. It was not as if I was waiting for a reward from life saying, oh, I've done all this and I deserve a reward.
No.
That is not nishkama karma. And I didn't even know what the concept of nishkama karma was. All I'm saying is, whatever you're confronted by in life, whether it is the health of a loved one, it is a job demand that you have to stay up to midnight, whether it is you have to give up a meal or two, whether you have to walk, whether you have to work extra and help a colleague, do it with complete passion. But detachment from the result, that is critical.
True. I think that is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And in fact, I'll just end with something very interesting that I heard a little child say. We had taken a group of international children to Urvakonda, and when these children went there and they saw the stone on which Swami sang Manasa Bhajare, so this little girl said that, you know, it is so touching for me that Swami said that this family does not belong to me. The whole world is waiting for me. I don't belong to you. But at the same time, Swami took the words of his own mother and see what he has made out of the promises that he made to the mother. So I think that is what we should learn from Bhagwan's life about expanding our love.
Yeah, if I may add, Swami said it's like a light. If it's within the room, it'll only illuminate the room.
Yes.
If you open the window, it'll illuminate a little further.
Yes.
But if you do it in the open, it'll illuminate the entire world.
Yeah.
So love is expansion.
True.
No, it is not contraction. True. So on that note also, one should not be possessive about the result and possessive about what we have.
Yes.
That Absolutely. Is the vairagya, detachment.
Absolutely. I mean, the renunciation is always renunciation of not the work, but renunciation of the fruit.
Professor Anil Kumar said it to somebody, I think, you know, said just because you put rice on the gas stove, it's not going to cook itself. Yeah. You still have to go through the motion of lighting it and putting, yeah.
True.
It
has to go through the process.
Yeah.
We are all in the process, right? We are all in the process.
Absolutely.
Work in progress.
Yes. Work in progress.
Work in progress. Wonderful. Well, there is no end to this discussion. I know we can go on for another 4 hours, 5 hours of the whole night, because there is so much to constantly deliberate on, because life also teaches you all these things. And as you now put Bhagwan's teachings and juxtapose with your life's experiences, you learn new ways of living, you learn new methods of practicing his teachings, and I think that is a process that continuously goes on. So dear listeners, please feel free to share your thoughts and your experiences and your experiments of taking this message into your lives. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much, Mr. Raj Srivastan. I know the time was too short, but really whatever you shared is really precious, and we really value that. Thank you so much.
One thing which sir told to end, I mean, from my side, what I wanted to say is, how is it that some people, or how do we keep the intensity on always? And I got an answer in the sense that if you are sincere every moment in whatever you do, whatever you think, that keeps the intensity on.
Yeah.
Because when I said that at the time of satsang, yes, everything we are like, you know, but it doesn't maintain. To keep the intensity always on becomes difficult. But if you're sincere, yes.
In whatever you do.
Whatever you do, every moment, sincerity, you worship and be devoted to sincerity in whatever you do, with conscience, as you said.
Yes.
It keeps the intensity.
May I share something? Or is that going to be... There was a three-year period in the US which was very trying and testing. And here is the reason why you need a guru. And Swami says, the guru will come to you when you're ready. When the student is ready, the master arrives.
Yes.
Yeah.
So no matter what you try to do before then, it will not happen, because we are all going through high school. We are going through different grades, right? This three-year period, I was fortunate that Swami already knew who he was, who he is. So there were so many tests in these 3 years. They rocked my boat. They rocked me. They cursed me. I was attacked. Professionally, a lot of things happened. But I was so focused on Swami's teachings that I will not let myself lose my temper. I will not let myself say anything bad. And every time somebody acted rude to me, I would follow Swami's teachings and pray for them. Now, this might seem very childish, but the thing is, it protects you from any negative thinking.
Absolutely.
And negative consciousness. So it prevents you. It's a preemptive measure. That's what it is. So those 3 years became the most fruitful sadhana for me.
Yes.
And the accomplishment was so high that I didn't even notice. Every day I used to go happy thinking, okay, Swami, I have not let you down. I don't want to let you down. So for a person who doesn't believe in God, at least do it for your mother.
Mm.
I don't want to make her unhappy.
Mm.
Okay, you don't want to do it for your mother. You don't have a good relationship with her. Do it for your father. You don't have a good relationship with your parents. Do it for your wife. If you don't have a good relationship for your wife, do it for somebody like a friend. I don't want to disappoint him. Or if it's not for him, then at least say that, all right, I've been given this life. Let's see how far I can go. And let me do the best I can. So Gandhi practiced his, you know, experiments with truth. Why can't we practice on a daily basis? Why can't we break it down into minutes and practice each minute?
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
My experiments with pure love. I think all of us can start on this journey.
That's a good one.
Yes.
That's a very good one.
And life will be so interesting and meaningful.
Absolutely.
Then.
And revealing.
Absolutely. Wonderful. So yes, dear listeners, do share your experiments with love, your experiments with dharma. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org or you can send us your comments to our WhatsApp number 9393-258-258. Offering this little endeavor at his feet with all humility and love, we take your leave. Thank you so much for being with us through this lovely spiritual journey. Sairam.
Pranams to Swami.
Sairam. Yeah.